CITR 101.9 FM. I'm David Love Jones, and tonight at the Fun Drive Finale, I'll be doing a DJ set around 12:45. So come down and check out all the bands interacting and the DJs later on tonight. But first, there's a re-edit of my show with Mike Ingram, part of the extension of the 20th anniversary show that we did over the holiday season. So stick around, and I'm going to be here through till 9 p.m. On the last show, we were celebrating 20 years of African Rhythms, and this is a continuation of that celebration, because finally tonight, Mike Ingram's going to be phoning in from the U.S. of A., updating us some more on what he's been doing in the last 15 years, and he's got his Sultry Radio, which in fact was just broadcasting live. So we've got a dual broadcast happening tonight here on African Rhythms on CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio, CITR.ca. You can tune in online. Let's continue on. Mike Ingram will be phoning in. But in the meantime, here's a track that Mike turned me on to. And this is a track called The Love of My Man.
The love of my man keeps me safe and warm. The love of my man protects
CITR, and this is African Rhythms Radio. Of course, you learned from our last show, we've been on the air for 20 years now, but one of my most esteemed guests is on the line from the USA right now. Hello.
What's up, Dave?
Hello, Michael.
Got it, brother.
Well, it's great that we finally got to do a full-on show together.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah,
well, that's some really good stuff.
So as we were saying in the last show, so you've been doing Sultry Radio, and where are you living now exactly?
I am in the Philadelphia suburbs right now. When I decided to do a music show again, I had already been versed in doing on-air radio. I was part of a three-man team. Well, firstly, I have to preface this by saying, in my current profession where I work as editor of Black Athlete Sports Network, they had started their radio arm, and they wanted to know who would like to do a show. So I took two of my colleagues at the time when I was working at the Philadelphia Tribune, which is the oldest continuous black newspaper in America, and the three of us, we called the show the Sports MCs. Myself, Mr. Bachelor, and Mr. Tony McLean became part of our troika, and we were the co-host of the show. And we were on air from 2006 until 2012, and we won an award for broadcasting.
That's great.
For the show, and it was from there I decided to spin off and do my own show, because one major issue, and that's always been to me the issue of profanity. One thing about internet radio that gives us license is that we can say exactly what needs to be said. And you know, there's always that little comedic thing that George Carlin does about the seven words that you can't say on air. Well, my take on profanity has always been, the real profanity isn't me saying any 4 or 12-letter expletive. The real profanity is understanding a situation that would make you say that 4 or 12-letter expletive. And that's where the politics came in, and that's where we took a dramatic turn that differed from where Bachelor Pad wanted to go, and that's why I decided to do my own show, where I could say that a real profanity is a 102-year-old black woman having to stand in line 6 hours to vote in the hot sun in Florida that's almost as hot as she is old.
Yeah,
and that
indeed.
Nobody's trying to do anything about it because they're hoping that she'll die.
Yeah,
that's
no,
that's profanity to me.
Absolutely. Well, I've seen on your Sultry Radio, and I've heard some of your shows, and definitely you're dealing with a lot of issues, a lot of politics, and creating a lot of awareness. Well, Theola Kilgore, who we were just playing, that was a 45 you brought up from New York City back in 97, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I named that show, which is up on our African Rhythms Radio, Mike Returns from New York City, and then we went one-on-one with the 45s, so lots of memories, my
I
friend.
I remember that show. Yeah, that was awesome. When they are on the mic proselytizing or going gospel on us, like my girl does on The Love of My Man, Theola Kilgore. I mean, she's testifying.
Yeah.
That in myself, I'm thinking it's a prayer when she gets up there and starts singing like that. It's like, if I ever ran into a girl that would love me like she sang, it'd be all over. I'm like, him, baby, just take it all. It's all, I got you, him.
No, for sure. I mean, all these years later, Theola Kilgore is resonating with me, and I'm just shaking my head going, man, there's people coming in my store all the time buying up every Etta James record I got. But Theola Kilgore never even got to make an album, you know, and she had some chops too. But, you know, check out this next woman, Dee Edwards, and I Can Deal With It. I think this is going to move not only our souls, but our listeners' souls indeed.
All righty.
Can't keep your cool.
But also, you're doing your all music shows.
Yeah, and, the music morphed from that, David. And,
yeah.
And the cool part about it was that it was going to be a one-time thing. It was something I was only going to do once a month at the last Sunday of the month to recognize, because we wanted to recognize the old school. There was a time where we lost all the major black stations in the States, at least on my side of the coastline. You might remember WBLS, which for a long time was, and what they were going to call urban contemporary or whatever, that died. It was bought up by a sports conglomerate,
right,
as well as another couple of stations, and they were dropping like flies. And this was something that was part of the New York scene, well, hell, as long as I've been born.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see something like that go was really depressing, and it was just another reminder that culturally there was something bereft in all of this, because it was when these companies folded up that people like Etta James were dying. And it's like, how could you not give Etta James proper respect? When I could remember when Marvin Gaye's murder happened, when he was killed by his father, and Frankie Crocker, who was an internationally known disc jockey, but he was also
yes.
a program director.
Frankie Crocker.
Frankie Crocker made sure that day that Marvin was murdered that the story was straight.
Yeah,
he made sure everybody understood what was going on underneath all of this, and he didn't sugarcoat anything. And had that been put in the hands of someone else, it surely would have had, let's just say, a different tone to it. But because Frankie Crocker was there to put it in its proper perspective, the story was kept tight, and the truth was maintained instead of some hyperbole or some other kind of other negative stuff coming out that someone else would have ran with just to get headlines instead of telling the truth.
Well, that's funny you should mention that Marvin Gaye, because just in my 20th anniversary show, I played an excerpt of an interview. Since we were on the air together, I've been blessed to have done some pretty epic interviews, and one of them, for sure, a towering one, was an interview with Bobby Taylor, you know, the local Motown singer. And Bobby and Marvin spent a lot of time together. In fact, he comes out in the interview, I've backed a lot of the stuff up with facts since,
sure.
but Bobby Taylor had a hand in writing ABC and I Want You Back.
Yeah, I know he did.
Yeah, which itself, you know, but then again, you know, he brought Michael to the label and was the producer of them in the beginning, so it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. But
exactly.
Can you imagine how you would feel, Michael, now living in Hong Kong? Imagine how bitter you could feel about never getting a penny in royalties from that. I mean, you know, what are we talking, $1 million, maybe even on the low side?
Oh, I mean, and we're not even talking, that's not even low with a capital L. I mean, it's shameful that the myth, you know, and that Diana Ross perpetuated it for as many years as she did about how she discovered them, and, you know, most people who knew that that wasn't true, but they never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Well, I mean, you just talk about some exploitation. I mean, the way Bobby Taylor says it, for one thing, he doesn't completely blame Berry Gordy, but, you know, the powers that be, because of how powerful and the big business interests.
Yeah. I always learned as a kid, honor thy father and thy mother. And it doesn't say, I don't care what they do.
Honor them.
The Bible says that. It doesn't say only if they are, only if she. It doesn't say that. It says honor thy father and thy mother. So I don't care what they do. You won't have to pay for it. If you do what that Bible tells you to. Those people who don't do it, they got to pay for it.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. I mean, speaking about Marvin, how religious he was and how spiritual he was, yet how messed up his life was.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. He bought a lot of that on himself.
But, I mean, what an incredible talent. I mean, the world may never see another talent.
Well, I'll say this about him. There was never another person that was as good as he was in a studio. So anyhow, where was I? Where were we?
We're talking about the Jackson.
No.
Was that what they were called?
No,
the Jackson.
The Jackson sisters.
Jackson sisters.
You know, after I did that, then, you know, I told you that Mac David asked me to do that.
Yeah.
For Curb. His name was Mike Curb. I knew I was going to remember it.
Yeah.
Mike Curb, who became the lieutenant governor of California.
Yeah.
Right? But he was the one that was the catalyst for the Osmond Brothers.
Yeah.
When they did One Bad Apple, which was a piece of a doo-doo of a song.
Well, isn't it kind of a rip-off of the Jacksons?
It was a rip-off of the Jacksons, and that's what Mike did. Mike was known for that.
Yeah.
So when I came over and did this one song, right, they were so thankful that I did it, you know, because it helped Mac get out of something.
Yeah.
And I helped Mac get out of it. Mac and I, we stayed friends up until the day he passed.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the Jackson sisters, actually, they have legendary cult status these days. Yeah. I mean, that record they did back then, I Believe in Miracles.
You know whose song that was?
Whose song was that?
That was my song.
That's a great
I'm still
track.
Getting paid to this day for that.
Well, it's a big track. I mean, in Japan, they love that, you know.
Same song.
Wow.
Grandma's hands clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma's hands used to ache sometime and swell. Grandma's hands used to issue out a warning. She said, Hattie, don't you hit that boy. What you wanna smack him for? He has just, I mean, he's gone into his pockets just to help and give me something that I couldn't find and see, and I think you'll wonder. I mean, the stuff that you keep our music alive by keeping those vinyls.
Yeah.
And people go down and see this young man.
But some other interesting things that Bobby Taylor had to say was that he actually had to lip sync for Marvin a couple times because, you know, Marvin and getting on stage and not showing up and all of that, you know.
Sure.
So, and then interestingly, right after I played that, I played my excerpt of Bobby singing What's Going On Live in Vancouver.
Yes, Bobby Taylor. You guys really need to listen to African Rhythm Radio at CITR 101.9 FM with the great David Love Jones.
That's just one moment, Michael. Another moment, Rochelle Farrell. I got her to phone into the show.
Yes.
She is actually, you talk about people who've been mistreated in the business. She, since she left Capitol Blue Note, not a wada, nothing. Like, she's talked about putting stuff out on her own label. She plays Montreux Jazz Fest. She regularly plays Washington, a gig.
Yeah.
Yearly gig. Rochelle Farrell, amazing. I got an interview with her. Really profound.
Okay. I think that's really cool that, you know, you've been able to keep that. And really, you haven't really, in this day and age where things, if you will, are becoming more and more formularized, it seems, you know.
More what?
Formula? I'm all mixed up with my word.
I got you. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. And they tend to stick to the formula like it's the last, you know, breath of air, because it's more about the money than it is the music.
Yeah. Well, I hope you, and I'm sure you're never going to let that mess with what you're all about. And I have a profound amount of respect for that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, no, that's not my route, and it's not why I do what I do. And it doesn't really speak at all the way that they approach music. The industry approaches music doesn't speak at all to my spirit, and it just doesn't resonate with my purpose.
The more I learn about, you know, through talking with you and stuff about your music and about what you're all about, like, I realize your balance in life, you know, what you do and what you eat and what you read and whatever, mm-hmm. is just as important as the music. Like, it's all one, if you will.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. All right. Well, I think we should let some people out there maybe be checking some of your music out here.
Okay.
I love talking to you and all that. I mean, I'm sure we could talk all night. And,
yeah, we could. You might go ahead and, you know, put a little music on.
Yeah.
Hey, baby. Something I got to tell. It ain't easy, but it's true. Hey, 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 sit on down, boy. Let me break the news. I am no longer in love with you. That is why I gotta go. Can't hold on no more. Tried everything I know. Now I got to go. Baby, I gotta go. Tried it out, cried it out, but talked it out before it out, and I thought it out. Now there's nothing left to do but walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on out. Hey, honey, I'm just about to roll up. Oh, it ain't easy, but it's real. It's breaking my heart, boy, to break the news. What we got ain't been nowhere in a very long while. In my heart, I cry much more than I smile. Oh, I gotta go. Can't hold on no more. Tried everything I know. Now I got to go. Tried it out, cried it out, we talked it out, we fought it out, and I thought it out. Now there's nothing left to do but walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on out. Hey, how can I tell you I don't love you? Not in the way that I used to. Don't take it personal. You're still you love you.
choose myself. I have to choose my growth and my health. My first responsibility is to me, and that's why I gotta go, baby. Can't hold on no more. Trying to everything I know. I gotta go, yeah. I gotta go. Yeah. I tried it out, cried it out, talked it out, thought it out, and I found.
Also, incredibly, Linda Jones' daughter, I kid you not, I got a hold of Linda Jones' daughter, and she phoned in, and she said it straight. Linda did not die on stage, that she died at home.
That's right, she died between sets.
Yes.
That's right. She was waiting, back in the day, so that all the Canadian listeners will understand, on Sundays, the Apollo used to have their matinee, then everybody would go home for dinner or whatever, and whatnot, and then you'd have the late show. And that's what happened to Linda Jones. She had just performed the matinee. She went home. I know diabetes was kicking at her bad.
Yeah, she did say diabetes. Nothing about drugs.
George Kerr was producing a lot of the stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That he had kept all the royalties for all of her mother's stuff along. You know.
What I could tell you about Linda is with Hypnotize, she came in, and it was one take.
Wow.
And what you have on record, that's what it is.
Yeah. Well, that's what really blows my mind about Linda is that she had this incredible vocal ability. I mean, we were talking a moment ago about Rochelle Farrell in modern day and, you know, what incredible vocal she is. But Linda was like that. Like, she had all this power and technique, but she held it back and unleashed it at those right kind of moments so she didn't overdo it, you know.
Yes.
And here, the next track we're going to play is kind of an example of that. What have I done to make you mad?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's this powerful kind of groove going on, but she kind of holds something back and then unleashes it, you know, in suitable kind of a way. But I think that she obviously learned, you know, I mean, when she like won at the Apollo or whatever, I mean, obviously she learned how to perform. She learned how to, you know, draw an audience in. She learned the craft, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know really who she learned it from or how that all came about.
And you know what? From what I understand and just from my family and everything, it's that was just a part of her. You know, like I said, her passion was just incredible. And, you know, it kind of, when you're listening to the records, it jumps off that. It jumps out at you. You know, it's what it is.
Yeah.
And she there was no fear, you know, in her approach. She just,
absolutely.
Whatever came, that's what you got. So,
yeah, it was a pure, natural, beautiful
gift. Very pure, very pure.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to David Love Jones. The show is African Rhythms, and of course, we're on CITR 101.9 FM. All right, Terry, well, let's drop a track from Linda for them right now.
Okay.
All right.
What have I? Treat me the way that you've been treated.
would think that something like that, a gift like that, nobody would be able to mess up, but we know with A&R departments, that's very easily done.
Well, this is the, I mean, this should come as no surprise, but the one woman who was in awe of Linda Jones's talent, apparently I've read now, is Aretha herself.
I believe it.
Yeah,
exactly. No, it's right. Linda was a singer.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, yeah. She's one of those, maybe a lot of y'all didn't know, but you ask all those that know, who's the singer? Who do they listen to? Boom!
Yeah.
You know, it's not surprised to find her name on a list anywhere.
So
it's a shame that in the midst of beautiful music and a culture that maintains itself, because so many people recognize the beauty in all of this, oftentimes the artists get screwed. As you were coming on, I was signing off with a Canadian artist who I feel has been screwed to a great deal, and that's Jenny B. Englishman, who's also known as Estero. I find Estero to be one of the most talented people out here right now.
Wow.
And she's in that Rachel Farrell trick bag of being so good that everybody knows she's good, but they know, you know, you're going to have to give her her props from an artistic standpoint, because I think now she knows, after being burnt a couple of times, that things have to be done on her on her side. And the same with Rachel Farrell. You know,
yeah, Rachel,
she believes
for
enough
sure
in her talent to know that if somebody's going to come calling, they're going to come calling correct and give her what she's supposed to have so that she can go forth. And we know that pop, when it comes to the world of pop music, they'll serve up anything. And if people get inundated with enough of it, you know, they'll swallow it. But when I'm thinking, every time I think about a Black Eyed Peas song, I realize the fact that Estero could have been the Fergie and the Black Eyed Peas.
Right.
And she surely would have artistically taken them in a whole other direction, because her voice, there's no way Fergie on her best day could touch Estero from a singing or artistic standpoint overall.
I'll have to look into that. Yeah,
that
sounds very
definitely
interesting.
It's something we see common in the industry always. There's always people like Rachel Farrell and Estero who can do everything. I mean, literally can do everything. And you would think, well, this would be a joy to work with, but then you get that combination of unscrupulousness, just straight-up greedy people, and let's be real, jealous people.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of jealousy in this business, bro.
Yeah, you know, there is. And I've noticed that you know, over the years with my DJing or just having a record shop or whatever, haters, jealousy, things like that.
Real,
and you've got to develop some thick skin, and you've got to just keep, you know, doing in your gut what you think is right. And you know what? It's eventually they drop off.
It's true.
Yeah, or you move on to some new ones or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, yeah, a real journey both of us have had, you know, living here in Vancouver, and you were too. But you know what? We tried to create some musical justice. We tried to wind our politics around the education of the music. I mean, occasionally we touch on issues and things.
Yep.
But, you know, we did it with the music. And here, why don't we go to this Bobby Bland? Yeah, no, I mean, I've loved a lot of his stuff over the years. But, man, this track, Shoes, I don't know how I missed this one. But what a track. You know this one?
I know of it.
Yeah.
One thing about Bobby Blue Bland is, and I made this point in the first part of Soul Tree Radio and Raw, you know, we don't get enough infusion of jazz and blues. And these are American art forms. You know, the Bobby Blue Blands and, you know, Guitar Slims and B.B. Kings, they are Brahms and Bachs and Mendelssohns, and, you know, they're not appreciated here. Just like with the bebop musicians, they had to go abroad to be appreciated.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, this track,
in large part,
was
due to the fact that, you know, they heard Muddy Waters and Little Walter and Little Milton or whatever it was, and, you know, they picked up on it. They understood how good it was, and we see this same kind of lack of production today, because even in a town like Chicago, which is rooted in the blues, you still don't have a real station that dedicates itself to blues programming or jazz or anything that ilk. So, you know, word of mouth is a powerful thing. If you're that good, and I don't think what a lot of people realize is that Bobby Blue Bland, unlike a lot of blues musicians, he didn't have a harp or guitar like B.B. Bobby Blue Bland only sang.
Yeah.
You know,
but
he
boy,
trusted
could he sing.
His orchestrations and whatever it was he was saying. And a lot of times you feel the gospel in there. A lot of times you can feel the jazz in there. But Bobby Blue Bland was a bad mamma jamma, and all he did was sing.
You know, you can compare him in some ways to James Brown himself.
Most definitely.
Yeah, here he is.
around, go back home, leave the girl alone. Can't you see she's breaking my heart? Don't you know she's through with me? Won't you have a little pity on me? One more show, a little sympathy, yeah. Shoot, can't you see it's hard on me? Oh Lord, shoot, won't you let me let her be? Can't you see she's one of a kind, and her kisses taste just like wine? I'll forget it all someday. She's doing me. Won't you have a little pity on me? Why not show a little sympathy, yeah.
And that is Bobby Blue Bland's Shoes. Yeah, what a track. it's incredible stuff, you know, smooth, and Carolina shag music is what Mike says it is.
Well, you know, Carolina shag is one of those subcultures, or one of those musics that is fiercely local. You know, a lot of times, stuff we hear, like, how can I put it? Build Me Up Buttercup by the Foundations.
Foundations, yeah.
That would be an example of Carolina shag music.
And they're British, just,
or,
too.
Or beach music. Sometimes they call it beach music.
British soul, yeah, that.
Anything that covers the Carolinas or those surrounding islands, grooves like that, they call that beach music and whatnot, and it's been a staple for almost 30, 40 years now.
Right. There's that California kind of beach music scene too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's definitely... Well, you know, I guess in truth, this soul music, the way people have envisioned it and played it and whatever is certainly quite different, as we were saying, in North America than in England, you know?
Sure.
I mean, sure, there is some young folk coming up now that are getting into kind of the Northern Soul sounds, and that's the current Northern Soul scene. Or you've also got some guys, and I do this myself too, the Funk 45 sets are kind of become popular too, you know? So that's another thing that's come up in the last few years.
Well, you know, regardless of how you divide it, David, you know, the fact remains that people are paying attention to it, and they're loving it, and that makes all the difference in the world. The fact that it's being exposed, because we know, even in this world where they've got all these different channels now, you know, they still can't channel in on what this soul music really does. Like they'll understand the Aretha and the Wilson Pickett and all that stuff, but they don't really get down to the bone and understand how massive an effect this thing has on a collective culture worldwide.
Well, this is it. I mean, you know, when you have some ability to be able to pick a good soul song, have some ability to be able to learn about unknowns and unknown labels and producers and songwriters, and be able to put that all together into sets of music, big up to people for having this love, because it's kept it alive.
Yeah, you know? It really has. And I can tell you, as those stations were being killed in the States, you know, there was no type of editorial backlash. And this is where I find fault with the black entertainment TVs of the world, because they are totally void of any kind of character, because anything that would have had that kind of control, where you have that much exposure to the masses, if you can't tend to that and address that and understand that, if it wasn't for that, there wouldn't be a black entertainment TV, and you wouldn't have the form in which you'd put out all these booty-shaking videos and all this other nonsense. And
yeah.
I ain't no prude, But it's like, it's about putting things in their proper context.
Well,
and
I mean, yeah.
Entirely on that.
In the beginning, I used to have a subscription to BET, and there was that Ramsey Lewis thing that he did. He had Rochelle Farrell on. He'd have all kinds of really creative, good acts. So, you know, it had some credibility, but I don't think I'd get a subscription again now on my cable, because I don't think there's anything left except the booty videos, you know? Like, it's sad.
It
I mean, I looked at their program. It looks terrible.
Way to culture, and that's where the script gets flipped. You would think something like that in name alone would encompass that, but it's not even remotely close to that. And I said, the only thing that I see that does that on a consistent basis is TV One when they do the unsungs.
Yeah, you're right. Those are good. I mean, I'd like to see even more.
It's really amazing that they are really detailed. They focus on all of those acts, like The Whispers, like Heat Wave.
Yeah, they've definitely done some good ones.
They've done some awesome ones, and they continue to be consistently good and making sure that those people get recognized. And it is one of the few things on anyone you want to call black TV or whatever that I will watch, because I know it'll be a good product. And
they did a good one on Donny Hathaway there.
Exactly.
But I don't know, if we got in there, we could, you know, maybe go Linda Jones, Sam Dees.
There's no doubt about that.
And yeah, man, we could do some pretty epic stellar work with those guys. So I don't know, we should be talking to those guys for sure. This next group we're going to listen to here, the Montclairs. Hell, we could do one on them. Why not?
Oh, hell yes. I mean, the Montclairs are some begging rascals, brother.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
Phil Perry.
They even made a song called "Begging Is Hard to Do."
Yeah.
It's
like, well, wait till you hear this song, Mike. Unwanted Love. Okay, here we go with a monster track here on African Rhythms, CITR 101.9 FM.
My days with you were
record company that worked them was based out of Shreveport. I think actually from Baltimore area. I'm not sure. I have to double check that myself.
Yeah.
But that track's from the Dreaming Out of Season, the Dreaming's Out of Season album, and Dreaming's Out of Season was a song that was getting played consistently on the New York Soul Station, WWRL. That I remember specifically.
There's some definite begging going on in that song.
Oh, there was some serious begging going on there. And the track that you brought out, Ease the Pain, was just, that's a mammoth track and stuff.
Yeah.
In terms of the harmony and the presentation and all of that, so.
Man, I'll tell you, one of the tracks back in the day when remastering a show, I realized that you turned me on to The Escorts.
Yes.
Which Jill Scott later on sampled for her track,
mm-hmm.
Family Reunion. Man, that Escorts album, the tragedy of them being in jail. And,
well, you know, if they were singing from jail, they was definitely begging. Like, you know, that's some deep stuff, but...
I'm telling you, man, Look on My Shoulder, that's got to be one of the best tracks you've ever
it's
turned me on
track.
To.
Take a look over your shoulder. Say, you. Come over here. And sit down and let me rant to you. I used to say I was sincere, baby. But when you needed me most, I was. Just look over your shoulder, girl. You're gonna find me all the way. I know you found someone.
Show me that you love me,
honey.
Just show me that you love me.
And girl, I have the right. Find someone who cares, and especially a love, baby, that's never been shared.
But if somehow you can't forgive me,
if somehow you can't forgive me, if somehow you can't forgive me, if somehow you can't forgive me,
I'm telling you, like, it's taken all these years to fully appreciate everything we did, you know, just because, like, week in, week out, we're just whipping out these three-hour shows. It's unbelievable.
You know, the cool part about all this is that because the music was so good, it has lasted.
Exactly.
You know, that a kid in Birmingham, England can pick up something like that and say, damn, you know, and that same kid in Birmingham, Alabama can pick up the song and say, damn. That's the beauty of soul music. You know, good is good. If you are good, you do this. You know, whether you're singing, whether you're playing, whether you're writing the songs, whether you're in front or in back of the microphone, if you can do this, you can do this. There is, there may not be a set epicenter for where soul originates, but it emanates from everywhere and can come from every place.
Yeah,
and I felt indeed. The same about hip-hop, even though, you know, much of it centered in the Bronx and stuff like that, but it was coming from everywhere. I mean, that itself was something that I did while I was there at CITR with the help of some of the staff there as they touched on that. I believe in 99 or 2000, but the long and short of it is, you know, this soul music is something that, you know, you can't fake it. Mm-hmm. That's real stuff. Whether you hear 1970s chords and wah-wah pedals or just somebody giving you some gut bucket vocals like what Bobby Blue Bland did or when my man, any of the other singers do when they are on the mic.
I was just saying big up to all our listeners in the Philadelphia area and all around.
All right.
Yeah, and yeah, our listeners out there in the world.
Over in Canada and whatnot, because we've yeah. been blessed with a few Canadian listeners that have been digging us when we do our Sunday show on Blog Talk Radio from 9 to 11 p.m.
So. Oh, that's great. Yeah, well, no, I've managed to pick up some listeners, done some networking in Northern Europe. My friend Miguel over there made a nice Lobato gentleman down in South Africa who he really digs the Henry Miller mixes, so mm-hmm. that's nice. I did a nice Henry Miller mix. Well, remember that Find Your Rhythm one with Pharoah yeah. Saunders on saxophone? So
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that one's back up on our... yeah, your comments about Henry Miller's philosophy in life are pretty profound in itself. But yeah, as we were saying in the break, it'd be nice to some of our deeper dialogue to just actually just get it all down in writing and maybe even into a book or something, because I think the work we did, especially if we edit it down, we could come up with some pretty interesting insights. And I think the written word, because indeed Mike is now a published author and going on to your second book, in fact.
Yeah, the second book will be out, I believe, sometime in February. It's science fiction called The Heroes of Harmony Corners, Part 1. The first book, Imitation and Life, is an exercise in pop culture where we refer movies, and there are lines from movies that are the actual punchlines to things that we bring up, whether they be of a political nature or having to do with music or sports or what have you.
Mm.
You know, it's... The saying is, just because they're celluloid doesn't mean they're not out to get you, and that's the premise of the book. And I think you might find some humor in there, but it's been doing well.
Yeah,
and,
you can get it on Amazon.
It's available on Amazon, and yeah. you can also download it via Kindle. Imitation and Life is the name of the book.
And that's Michael Lewis Ingram is your full name? Yeah, no, that's fantastic. No, I'm really impressed. The things you've accomplished in life, Mike, it's inspiration to all of us, for sure.
It keeps me off the streets, bro.
Yeah. All right, well, get out, Mini Collier. We're about to get pretty raunchy here. But this is some rough and tumble soul right here. What do you know about, what do you know about this song? Is this
well,
familiar?
I know when Mini... moved over to Chess, because she's been singing for Chess for a long time. She has great tracks. I mean, the epic track, I Had a Talk with My Man, which
Indeed.
Was a secular version
of yeah.
the song I Had a Talk with My God Last Night.
Which right.
was consistent with the 1950s, you know, acts who were trying to walk that line between, you know, does gospel, you know, pay off in the soul vein, or is it blasphemous? You know, it's one of those crazy things, and it's part of the demons that got into Marvin Gaye's father, be totally truthful about it. But in Minnie's case, you know, she had been singing for Chess for a while, and with Etta's success, when Etta did the At Last album, you know, Minnie decided to go in that direction. And I think on this tune here, that first 30 or 40 seconds of the song, it's definitely more Etta than it is Minnie. I mean, not to say that Minnie's not true to herself in this song, but you hear her. You hear the raunchy ass horns that you would have heard in I Want to Make Love to You on even more production vein. And yeah, she's like Etta and Laura Lee was when Laura sang Dirty Old Man, or You Dirty Man, like, get out! You know, it's like she starts the song and whatnot. It's like, it's clear from the first few seconds what has already happened, and Mitty's just...
Yeah, well, indeed. I mean, I guess the message we've got here for our listeners is Theola Kilgore, Mitty Collier, there's other deep soul like Etta. It needs to be heard, and here it is. We're going to hear it right now.
All right.
Yeah. you can. Since you decide to be a backdoor man, get up. Ooh.
And don't you never, never, never come back.
It bothers me because when my first direct involvement with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was after the movie The Five Heartbeats came out. And if you remember, it was loosely based on the Dells. So
right.
I had been talking to Charles Barksdale. Barksdale had made it clear to me that, you know, he really didn't like the whole premise of the Hall because they weren't recognizing not just him and performers like him, but they didn't pay attention to the early people like Wynonie Harris and Ray Brown, Bull Moose Jackson, folks like that, who were creating the grooves that eventually Bill Haley and the Comets would jump on. And he said, if you're going to be a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you got to cover all the bases.
Well, not to mention Louis Jordan.
But you know, having said that, you know, Louis Jordan at least got a look at and was given more consideration again after Purple Rain came out and everybody saw the Morris Day and how he was a foil and how the Time got a lot of inspiration from Louis Jordan as he was a front man and stuff.
Interesting.
But when you weigh all of this stuff, it still comes back to people having the power of life and death, literally sometimes. And when the Dells got in finally in 2004, they all were able to get in intact, all five of them. You know, and
I see.
It's just sad when you know that somebody should have gotten their roses while they were alive to smell them, and that they would deliberately, in some cases, wait for people to die before they'll say, "Oh yeah, you know, by the way, these guys were good or these girls were good, and well, we're going to recognize them." You know, it would be nice to recognize them while everybody's alive to take their bow.
Well, you'd have to say
dirt on their graves.
You'd have to say that about, you know, somebody like Sam Dees too. You know that he's still here in America, and he's made a couple of gospel CDs more recently. Production on them was not particularly epic because he's very isolated.
Yeah, I can't believe it, but see. It, thanks to cyberspace, we now have some place to redress a balance, even if for nothing else in the mind of the artists, to make them understand that they are loved. Because a lot of times, you know, when we're doing these things, when we do anything from an artistic standpoint, it's not so much that we're doing it for ourselves, it's whatever it is that's in us that comes out of us. Something spiritual takes over, whether it's writing, whether it's music, whether it's performing dance or anything like that. You know, that artistic thing is not to be fucked with. And when people come out and be honest about what they're doing and how they're doing it, if it's if there's a form of where it can be appreciated, it's so much the better for all of humanity and stuff. And that's why, you know, these things I take seriously and passionately, and you know, that's just the long and short of it.
Yeah. Well, we're getting towards the end of the show. I mean, well, the thing is, I mean, I have, bless my hard work, but, you know, I've managed to have my own record stores and laugh about it because there was times I've struggled to get where I've got today. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't always work out that way. Usually the rich and powerful stay in those positions, but I feel slightly more richer now.
You know, karma can sometimes be late, but she never misses an appointment, bro.
Yeah, indeed. No, I feel like it is sweet justice that, you know, I've been able to bring our shows back and we're finding some new listeners for them and that people have been inspired by them. And Nardwar even stopped his car to listen to them. It's great. I mean, I don't do it for those reasons. I think we both always just did it because we loved it. There was never any money in it. We had the passion. And so I think that the karma of life has dealt us a little bit of justice, brother.
Definitely.
Yeah, all right. Well,
balances out in the end, bro. I was thinking about what I do as my other vocation and doing fundraisers and stuff like that, and oftentimes they'll play, you know, just about any kind of music, but they'll play up-tempo stuff. I hadn't heard a Prince song played all year long. And some of these venues, you know, are ethnic, and you think, yeah, okay, they're going to play Prince, but they didn't, and it was like the more I thought about it, you don't hear Prince on the radio. I mean,
yeah,
that's really, really vicious because
odd.
Prince bucked the system and he won.
Yeah.
You know, to a great extent, Prince beat those guys because after he fulfilled his contract, he was like, I'm going to get you guys. I'm going to live well. 1999 came out and at the end of the century and it was 1999 and who knows how much in royalties he got off that one song alone.
You know. Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems because of his problems with the major, he seems to have paid a large price, really, and had no success. His distribution is only, I mean, and then if you look on YouTube, there's not one Prince track comes up. I don't know if that's because of him. It's because of Warner's trying to get him back. But there's some kind of conspiracy going on against him, it seems.
Dorothy was a waitress on the promenade. She worked a night shift. Dishwater blonde, tall and fine. She got a lot of tips. Well, earlier I'd been talking stuff in a violent room, fighting with lovers past. I needed someone with a quicker wit than mine. Dorothy was fast. Well, I ordered.
Yeah, let me get a fruit cocktail. I ain't too hungry.
Dorothy laughed. She said, that sound like a real man to me. You're kind of cute. You wanna take a bath?
Do you want?
Bath? Oh, I said, cool. I'm leaving my pants on. Cause I'm kinda cool. Someone just a sound like a real man to me. Mind if I turn on the radio? Oh, my favorite song, she said, and it was Joni singing. Right then and there, I knew I was through.
My thought
was gone.
When you buck a system like that, you always pay a price. It wasn't just some sort of act when he was writing "Slave" on his face. He really was. And if you heard his material prior to him finishing up his contract, from the time he did that, it really wasn't up to snuff.
It wasn't impressive.
It was somebody who was just doing their job, fulfilling their whatever, and then boom, he was gone. And then once he was free of that, his artistic thing just rejuvenated again. But the fact that you can still make money by word of mouth is the essence of a true artist. And everybody knows, if Prince decides he's going to do a show, it's going to sell out. You know, he doesn't need the mainstream media to keep feeding him, which is something that every artist would live and kill for, pretty much, that you could make your bar, that you could go out anywhere and make a living that way.
Well, that's true. I mean, Prince seems to understand that that is one way he can keep his power and make some money, is just simply to book gigs, you know, outside the powers that be or whatever. Prince should be a lesson on the powers of the music business. I mean, the ultimate lesson, sadly, is Michael Jackson, really. Yes. He is the ultimate example. I mean, the lies that were told about him, the way he was exploited, is just everything that's horrible about the music business.
That's a show by itself, brother.
Yeah, indeed. But, you know, I've still got one more track. Can you maybe come back one more time, or should we end it right here? Okay, well, awesome, because I think that this track would be fitting to play, We Gotta Survive, because in modern day, and this track's from Philadelphia, and you're calling from Philadelphia, so there we go. So Revelation, I would imagine, our Philly soul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because let's see, Norman Harris is doing the production.
That's all Philly.
Yeah, indeed. So, We Gotta Survive might be more relevant today than it was when this came out in the mid-70s. So we'll go into that. We'll come back one more time. And indeed, we will end up with Linda Jones. But being that the next purse DJ didn't come in because it is the holiday season, we're going overtime. So what the hell? All right, here it is. Revelation, We Gotta Survive on African Rhythms.
It was just great. Whenever I get to talk Jason Hoover, Bobby Taylor, Terry Jones, Linda Jones' daughter, to talk about the injustices in the business so direct from people that have so directly experienced exploitation, these are profound moments in the 20 years of African Rhythms.
No doubt.
Yeah, indeed. Well, my brother, you know, it would be great to just talk all night, but, you know, we've gotten a good solid hour and a half, and pretty close to an hour and a half, and I'm very grateful that you've taken the time. I mean, I know you're a very busy man. You just come off your other radio show. You've got your job. You've got your writing. But, you know, doing these community things, it does kind of balance and bring it all together, indeed. And an artist we're both pretty familiar with, but We're On Our Way Home, I think, is a good party jam way to go out. Right. Brainstorm, another underrated band.
Another underrated band and another good live act. But, you know, when you got great musicians who are also good showmen, that helps keep money in the till. Because you want to be able to go somewhere, and the people know that when your name is on that on that dais, yeah, boy, I got to see them. I remember them last time. You know, that's the best feeling in the world for an artist, when they know your work is good. And they know, oh yeah, this is going to be worth investing my time. We all know the reasons a lot of times why people need art. You know, they need it. Whether it's to go to a club to listen to somebody live or to listen to music, you know, played by a DJ or whatever, they need that nourishment. It really does feed the soul. So, you know,
indeed,
artists who sometimes don't look at the practical side because they are just looking to do just that, be expressive and feed souls, sometimes they don't get fed back properly. And if there's any real justice out there, you know, all you really want in an ideal situation is for any artist to be credited for what they do. And if it's good enough to maybe be denoted for it by being recognized either as being great among their peers or so great that, you know, culturally they change things in their own way and they need to be recognized for it.
Indeed, my friend, wise words. I think it's, for both of us, been part of our life experience to be able to bring some justice to these sad artists. If that's just a little bit of the reason we were put on this earth, I think it's a noble thing to do. You know?
It's been a pleasure doing this, and I look forward to doing it again, David.
Indeed. Well, just like traditional African Rhythms, perhaps you can send us one of your traditional shout-outs.
Well, I will shout out to all our listeners, collectively, all soul patrollers in these ears who checks us out when we download our show and put it again out on edification out in cyberspace, to everybody in Canada, to all my family, to my beautiful daughters, Nikki and Leah, my granddaughters there, Sika, Kaylee, Elena, Dylan, my grandson, everybody out there who's listening, understand that if you want to know where the soul tree grows, the roots of all of that, begin with African Rhythms.
Indeed, my friend. Profound thank you. I'm David Love Jones. Indeed, that's Michael Luis Ingram. We will do it again, my brother.
All right. Yeah. Have a safe weekend, everybody, and welcome in 2014 in style. No drinking and driving, please.
Indeed. All right. Well, we're going to go out in smoking fashion, and Happy New Year to all our listeners on African Rhythms Radio, on CITR.ca, Soul Tree Radio in the Philadelphia area. So until next time, we're going out with Brainstorm. We're on our way home. Peace and love.
vegetables, I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all.
Sprouts, you've ate here before. Community Eats is back for the summer.
We are your local food co-op.